scheduled for action today. Many of them Senate bills, and then we'll move to
Thank you for signing.
What was listed as sub will actually be full committee. We'll be dealing with the Jordan insurance package.
Or a sleeping bag.
I want to remind folks we've got a floor session today at 3. We may get called down there for roll call, and some of us may be called away to carry bills, or we may have calls that are going to interrupt our afternoon. At 4 p.m., we'll take up the bill that was referred from the floor back to committee regarding the paraphernalia issues. So we'll try to get started on the bills in the order in which they're listed, and keep you advised in terms of our schedule and how it looks. Let's start then with Senate Bill 866. Representative Bellamy, I think.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 866 is the bill we passed last session increasing the Justice of Court fees. There was a sunset on it so that we'd have time to look at just what the fees were increased to and to evaluate them as to how they fit into the overall program. We've heard no comments regarding the fees, so this removes the sunset. There is one provision of an amendment that we need to consider in full committee simply because we didn't have it drafted in sub and we thought it was technical enough that we could look at it in full committee. It's the 866-1, and staff may have to help me, but let me have staff take that one.
Well, basically what this amendment does is it provides that the $22 fee in a forcible entry and detainer action will continue. Without this amendment, that fee just sort of drops out of the scheme.
And there is no fee.
And there is no fee.
For justice courts.
Okay.
Well, I should say for justice and municipal courts. Because the bill deals with, I think, both, doesn't it? Thank you. Mr. Chairman, while we're looking that up, I would move the amendment to Senate Bill 866, labeled -1.
Okay. You want to move the -1 amendments. Representative Bellamy moves the -1 amendments bearing the date June 5th, 1987 to the Bill 866. Any objection to those amendments? If not, they're adopted. Representative Bellamy?
I would move Senate Bill 866 to the floor, do pass.
Representative Bellamy moves Senate Bill 866 to the floor as amended with a do pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Hate to let that related clause go, Representative Bellamy, but
is it a good one? Well,
maybe next session. If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye. Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Excused.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Aye.
Ringer? Aye. Motion's adopted. Representative Bellamy?
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bunn asks unanimous consent to be recorded as an aye vote on Senate Bill 866. Is there any objection? If not, the record shall so reflect. Okay. Let's move on to 444.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 444 was amended in subcommittee to do two things. Number one, to delete the introduction lines 3 through 5. And you'll see that in the form of -7 amendments. And it has a subsequent referral to revenue. In subcommittee, we did vote to rescind that. Senator Hamby was in. We voted to rescind that. Senator Hamby was to confer with and I were to talk to Representative Hostica, and with the understanding that if anything changed, either she or I would get back to this committee. I've talked to Representative Hostica, and he has requested that we not rescind the referral to the Revenue Committee. And with that, I would move that Senate Bill 444, as amended by dash 7 only, be referred to the Revenue Committee with a due pass.
Okay. Representative Hanlon moves Senate Bill 44 A engrossed as amended to the floor. I'm sorry, B engrossed to the floor. Due pass, and further that the measure be re-referred to the Committee on Revenue.
Mr. Chair, I maybe it's just a technical point. It came with the referral.
Okay, so it has the our action today would be basically in full committee reinstating that which the subcommittee had previously recommended rescinding.
Correct.
Okay. So it goes to the floor. The committee report by prior reference would have the bill going to Revenue Committee if the vote's successful. Is there further discussion? Question? If not, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Hanlon's motion.
Aye.
Okay, 471.
Representative Dix.
Dix was going to carry that.
One of us can take it.
Okay.
It's a little one. Mr. Chair, it adds the abuse of one parent by another to be consoled. This bill.
Why don't we just put it off?
Maybe we're going to put it off.
Let's set this one aside until Representative Dix returns. Okay. How about 298, trade secrets?
Mr. Chairman, 298 is a bill which would basically codify current Oregon case law and in addition set forth a former Oregon Uniform Trade Secrets Act. It's a law that will make it easier to determine what is a trade secret, what is not, and it'll make it good. It's easier for people to practice in this area and easier for business.
Okay.
Mr.
Is there a motion?
I'll move A engrossed 298 with a due pass.
Okay. And I don't believe there are any amendments in
Council, we didn't have any amendments, did we?
Okay. Representative Hanlon moves Senate Bill 298 A engrossed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
298.
Aye.
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 Two ayes.
Aye.
Pass. Coming up here.
That's it.
Representative Dix?
Aye.
Votes aye.
Aye.
Take 471 for you because I thought it would be.
Aye.
Easy.
Oh, no.
I started to read the staff.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Any volunteers? Miller?
Randy, you take all the hard ones.
Thank you. They seem to turn out that way, don't they?
Okay. Chair, if we'd have been this prolific in March, we wouldn't have had as much to do, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
I'll reserve my comments until a bit later in the day. Representative Dix, would you like to take up Senate Bill 471 at this time?
Certainly.
Okay, why don't we do that?
This measure addresses, will require the court to consider spousal abuse as being contrary to the interests of the child. There was some discussion in committee on a section of the bill, rather lengthy discussion on a section of the bill on line 18, the word only. I supported the motion at one time to strike only. That came into question, and council came upstairs and suggested that it changed the law somewhat more dramatically than I had intended when I had originally voted for the motion. I then made a motion to put it back in. So the bill is before you with the word on line 18 only in the bill. And it'd probably be easier for me to ask questions, answer questions as we continue.
Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chairman, I had also raised an issue, and I came to agreement with the proponents of the bill for an additional change. I just wanted to be sure that's reflected.
Your amendment was adopted in subcommittee, and I believe is reflected, Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chairman, further, Representative Dix, what's the number of that amendment?
-4.
Yeah. I believe it's -4.
-4 dated 6/4/87, not -4 dated 5/28.
Another question. Thank you.
Okay. The amendment had been adopted in subcommittee?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 471 as amended in subcommittee to the floor of the House do pass recommendation.
Representative Dix moves Senate Bill 471 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Yeah, if not, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
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 No.
No.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Miller.
Serve notice of a possible minority report on Senate Bill 471. Dan Gross.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Phillips.
I ask consent of the committee to change my vote to aye.
Representative Phillips asked unanimous consent on 471 that he be permitted to change his vote from no to aye. Is there any objection to that? If not, the record shall so reflect.
Thank you.
Okay, on 471, Representative Dix, do you wish to be the carrier on that?
Sure.
Okay.
Me and you, buddy.
Okay, 299.
Mr. Chairman, 299 is a bill that amends the current Uniform Limited Partnership Act, and it does so by providing a shorter form to file, requiring limited partnership firms to contribute to the limited partnership to be in writing. Limits circumstances under which a limited partner will be treated as a general partner, and allows a limited partnership agreement to specify conditions under which a general partnership will be admitted. I think this bill is probably more important than it would have been a year ago because of the tax changes. Inability to pass assets out of a corporation tax-free has caused many businesses to be put in a limited partnership form. And this will make it easier to conduct business in Oregon using a limited partnership.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanlon.
I move 299 to the floor with a due pass.
Okay. And the amendment -3 had been adopted in subcommittee?
That's correct.
That is correct. As amended.
Representative Hanlon moves Senate Bill 299 engrossed as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Anything for Barr here? The clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Bunn.
Aye.
Burton.
Aye.
Dix.
Aye.
Aye.
Hanlon.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Phillips.
Aye.
Ringer.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Any volunteers?
I'll do it.
Okay. Hanlon. Okay. Let's try 111, Senate Bill 111. I think this came from the criminal law subcommittee.
Just the same thing.
Okay, all right. I'm going to go ahead and do this.
Okay, sure.
Chairman,
Senate Bill 111
including
is a bill which would make it more difficult for a someone who's driving under to get in the program if they had a prior conviction. The defendant is eligible for diversion program if within the prior 10 years the defendant has no prior convictions for DUI, has not participated in the prior diversion alcohol program, has not been convicted of a serious crime involving the operations of a motor vehicle. Existing law does not expressly allow evidence of certified driving record to provide any of the above disqualifying factors to determine eligibility for diversion. This presents a procedural problem in the courts. This bill would allow a certified driving record as prima facie evidence of the facts contained in the driving record. Also, the bill establishes a procedure to terminate diversion agreements. At the hearing, the court will terminate the diversion agreement if it finds the defendant violated the agreement or is ineligible for the program. Upon termination, the case will be scheduled for a plea or for trial.
Okay. Any amendments?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Rep. St. Burton?
Chairman, I move Senate Bill 111 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Burton moves Senate Bill 111 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Burton.
Aye.
Dix.
Aye.
Hammond.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Phillips.
Aye.
Ringer.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Representative Bunn, would you like the honors?
Yes.
Okay. Senate Bill 114.
Chairman, Senate Bill 114 is a bill that came from Subcommittee 2. Currently, it's a Class A misdemeanor to place pollutants in a brook, stream, spring, well, road, highway, or pro-vacant field. The statute also allows the DEQ to impose a civil penalty for doing the same thing. However, there was a technical problem with the law in the sense that the criminal statute was not referenced in the civil statute. So it was good to reference the criminal statute in the civil statute, thus allowing the Department of Environmental Quality to impose a civil fine in the same violation.
Actually, they inherited it.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Rep. St. Burton. I'll move Senate Bill 114 to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Rep. St. Burton moves Senate Bill 114 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
The subcommittee could assure me that offensive substances are clearly defined.
Yes. If you check in ORS, I'm sure you'll find the definition there that I don't think the agency or I've never heard of any problems in applying the definition.
Like that flying pursuit.
Any further discussion on 114? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Miller.
Aye.
Springer.
Votes aye. Any volunteers? Representative Burton?
Sure.
Why not? Okay, 322.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, this comes from Senate. From the subcommittee too, Senate Bill 322, under current statute ORS 221349, gives a person charged with violating city charters or ordinances the right to a jury trial, regardless of whether the violation is a crime or an offense. This bill simply deletes the offense form offenses from the jury trial requirement, so that person would actually have to face the possibility of would not face the a person who does not face the possibility of imprisonment would not be entitled to a jury trial and would be in entitled only to a non-jury
Thanks
trial.
Clarification.
I'd move Senate Bill 322 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Burton moves Senate Bill 322 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellman?
Aye.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Hamlin?
No.
Aye.
Aye.
Votes aye. Any volunteers? If not, the chair will carry it. Okay, 581.
Chair, 581 comes from sub 2 also. Current statute makes a class C felony if a citizen fails to obey a law enforcement officer's command to assist in dispersing a riotous assemblage. However, in 1986, the U.S. District Court declared the statute unconstitutionally vague and overly broad. Effectively, what this bill does is deletes the unconstitutional portion of the statute. The bill does not affect the authority of law enforcement officers to order the dispersal of a person involved in a riotous assembly and to arrest those who refuse. So it repeals certain police powers to command assistance during unlawful assembly. I'd move Senate Bill 581 to the floor and the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Burton moves Senate Bill 581 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Dix?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Aye. Motion is adopted. We'll ask Senator Yee to carry it.
do you think, Mr. Chair, the governor will not veto this at this time?
Well, I don't make any bets on what the governor does in terms of vetoes or not vetoes. Representative Burton, would you like the honors here?
Sure. Well, if he does, maybe we can deal with, you know, with a special session for tort reform, you know?
Yeah, right. Okay, don't forget workers' comp reform.
Exactly.
Okay, Senate Bill 174.
Let's see, this is ours too. This comes from sub 2, Chairman. Okay, under current law, probation officer, the current law permits a probation officer to arrest a probationer for alleged probation violations and then lodge him in jail. Pending court appearance for allegations, and often there isn't space available in the jail, but the nature of the violation doesn't really warrant a pre-hearing detention. So as a matter of policy, probation officers cite probationers, probation violators, as they, under the statutory provision required to do that. No specific statutory authority exists for the issuance of a citation to appear in court, however, at the same time. In lieu of arrest. So this bill would authorize a probation officer without prior court approval to issue a citation to a probationer who's in violation to appear in court on a specific date. If the probationer fails to appear, then the court can issue an arrest warrant. In Section 3 of the bill, there's a specification of the contents of the citation and direction of the copy of the citation to be filed with the court. So I'd move Senate Bill 174 to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Representative Burton moves Senate Bill 174 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellman?
Aye.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Hamlin?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Who'd like the honors? Representative Bauman?
Certainly.
Thank you. I'd like to share the wealth here. I believe that takes us to 568.
You missed a couple.
Council?
Mr. Chairman, under the current law, the taxing district forecloses on property paid in property taxes. The proceeds from any sale first go to pay delinquent taxes, costs of maintaining the property, interest, and penalties. In any excess is deposited in the unsegregated tax account and distributed to all taxing districts. The former owner received none of the excess funds. This bill would require the proceeds from property sold for delinquent taxes be distributed first to the taxing district and the remainder, if any, to be paid to the person forfeiting the property. I'd say that would probably be only equitable. It would be similar to what happens if the property were foreclosed for reasons other than taxes. There is a subsequent referral on this bill to the Revenue Committee.
Oh, there is.
Mr. Chairman, did you see that?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Representative Bunn.
I'd just like to ask counsel, and I haven't had a chance to review the bill carefully, but is it set up so that after you've paid the governmental bodies and the expense of selling the property, that any lien holders or security interest holders would have their security or lien paid before the underlying property owner?
Mr. Bunn, I do not believe that's addressed in the bill. It may be addressed somewhere else in the statutes, but to my knowledge, not in the bill.
Representative Bond.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just express a concern, and if it doesn't cause a problem with the bill, perhaps hold it to have that checked. It seems to me it would be fairly important to assure that we haven't inadvertently bypassed any security holders in this process, and if there were a way that we could hold it for staff to check that and then move it as swiftly as possible.
Is it due to go to Revenue Committee, or yeah, only recognize Representative Phillips?
Yeah, just in a couple of months, it's our understanding, Representative Bond, that the security interest, meaning mortgage bankers, supported this. And I would certainly hope that they wouldn't have done that if their rights would have been abrogated anyway. The second issue with regard to the referral to Ways and Means, or to Revenue, that came as a request from, I believe, Representative Hugo, at total surprise to Senator Hill. That was after the fact that issue, Senator Jim Hill in this case, let the committee know of what happened on that one, in case you hear about it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, might I suggest this and get the chair's advice on this? If we could go ahead with it, and as it's going to Revenue, have our staff check that issue and let us know the resolution.
Okay, if the vote is favorable on the motion and the bill, I assume it's going to go to Revenue.
Yeah.
At this point, I will direct staff to. Before we file the committee report, which will probably not be today, but probably not sooner than Monday, direct staff to contact and who specifically or what groups?
Oh, there weren't any groups. I'm just concerned that if council can check either the statute or with one of those that has expertise in the area to assure us that security interest holders would be protected under the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Let me just make sure staff's clear on.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I reviewed the bill just now, and it mentions nothing about subsequent lien holders. I will check. My assumption is that they are no worse after this bill has been passed than they would be before.
We'll double check, however, to make sure that's the case. Representative Bellamy?
Yeah, I would direct staff to very closely look at the second page in that sub B. It indicates there that after the forfeiting of property, the remainder shall go to the person forfeiting the property. I'd like to know, make sure they look at the legal aspect of that. Because if there's lien holders and they give the money to the person, it may not get to the lien holders. But even more concern I have is, Mr. Chair, on page one, there's a term in there, and any other costs necessary for sale. And I know what that means. But I also know that the county could have a sizable fee for legal costs and so forth. And if you're sitting there with a lien on the property, you're going to have to make a decision as to whether or not you're going to have to pay off the taxes and try to sell it yourself and get some money back or allow the county to do it, particularly if the county's going to add up a great deal of expense. So I'll vote for it and send it to Revenue, but this bill
Well, so you're in agreement that
I'll let it go to revenue yet, but I want you to know that maybe we should be flagged in revenue so we can get down there. This bill may be fine, but it's got some red flags for
me. Okay, well, I'll tell you, I'll follow it through that revenue process on behalf of Senator Hill and try and check some of those issues and get a hold of his staff then.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, so
Representative Hanlon.
So will I.
Well, yeah, you're there. I abrogate that responsibility to you.
Okay, well, with Representative Hanlon's further assurance that he's going to bird dog this bill down in revenue, and with the understanding that staff will review and explore the concerns expressed by members previously, and if we find that in fact there's a problem, we'll leave it to the full committee to either pull the bill back or to make sure that those concerns are addressed down in the revenue committee. Is that generally agreeable? Mr. Taylor?
Chairman, maybe we'd want to direct your attention to page 2, line 34. Maybe we could make an amendment in committee with Representative Bunn's concern about lien holders. It says the second the remainder shall go to the person forfeiting the property. Maybe an amendment could be passed in concept, which would overstate that something to the effect without prejudicing the rights of any.
Relating to the Office of Consumer Advocacy. Is there any objection to that amendment? If not, be adopted. Commissioner, I believe the next subject, one to which I think your comments have been invited, has to do with the liquor liability issue and whether or not the state ought to exercise some additional responsibility in terms of a funding mechanism.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that I'm looking at what is identified as House Bill 3368-5, which are dated 6/1/87, and they are the amendments that create a I would call a New York and Liquor Liability Insurance Corporation. And what I'm here to tell you that the governor's office is very concerned about the situation of certain businesses in the state being able to have insurance to stay in business, and he believes, and the governor believes, that in fact it is a good policy to establish a fund of this nature. Now, you have a number of other amendments that are dealing with liquor liability, which I've heard about, but my testimony on behalf of this proposal is solely to this issue of the creating of this fund. We think that it's something that at this time, because they are not capable of finding insurance, that basically we've evolved to a situation where it used to be that the government and licensing board used to determine whether people practiced a profession or went into business, and it appears that now that the insurance industry is making that decision for us. Because of the fact that if one cannot find insurance, they have to go out of business, and I think it's a good policy to have every mechanism available on this issue of insurance, that they would have the ability to go and obtain insurance. Now, there are some amendments that are being proposed by some representatives and some of the people who have authored this particular bill, and they can talk to you about the amendments that they have to that version of the bill that I just told you about.
Chair.
Representative Phillips.
Ted, have you reviewed the tort bill and the insurance specific information in that bill?
No, I picked them all up just a little while ago, that all the amendments that have been put into it.
Another question?
Representative Phillips.
Are you aware that 3368 as in Section 7, a part of the funding and the critical part of the funding, that there will be an assessment on wholesale distributors, gross revenues?
I was aware of that, and I'm trying to find out if that's one of the amendments that they talked about, that the people, but I'm not sure that it is, and you have to talk to them people who put the bill together, whether that's one of the areas that they're trying to amend with their proposed amendments.
I guess, Mr. Chair.
Representative Phillips.
Can you tell me if the governor, since you're here apparently speaking on his behalf, expresses support for establishing a fund of liquor liability that would not be based necessarily on premiums, but would also be supported by a wholesale liquor tax, call it whatever you want?
As I said to you, that the governor's position is a support for the general concept that a liquor liability fund of this nature is something that this committee should look at.
How does the governor suggest we fund it?
Well, obviously, this is not, to be very frank with you, isn't an issue that the governor has presented to the legislature. It was something that the legislature, different interest groups, and what the governor has said is that he thinks that it is worth the effort of the legislature to try to find a funding mechanism or, in fact, what other mechanism that you can to see that one of these funds exists. There are a multitude of different proposals in the legislature on funds, liability insurance funds of some kind or another. The governor hasn't expressed an opinion about specifically the funding of this one, and to my knowledge, he hasn't expressed an opinion about the funding of any of the other ones that are presented to the legislature.
Well, if I may.
Representative Phillips.
Ted, when you began your testimony, you were speaking in support of this bill on behalf of the governor's office, this bill, and then you revert back to saying that you're concerned about the issue or the governor is concerned and something has to be done. And when asked specifically what should be done and how it should be financed, then you're leaving it up to us. But you were speaking on behalf of this bill, and this bill does have it being tax supported. So I guess I need a clarification.
Well, let me clarify then, and I'll repeat what I said in the beginning, is that I am here to tell you that the governor supports the concept of a liquor liability fund as of the kind and nature in House Bill 3368. Now, that doesn't say, as I said earlier to you, that there are a number of other provisions that this committee has adopted on liquor liability. The governor hasn't expressed an opinion on. And it's the same thing as I'm telling you now, that on the funding issue, the governor doesn't express an opinion because of the fact that that's a legislative process. This is not something that he proposed to the legislature, but he wants the committee to work on the general concept of finding a way to provide a liability fund for this particular industry. It is a good idea. It is the same thing whether you have a professional liability fund with the doctors, whether you do it for any of the other organizations that have that are around. I think that's what his position is, and that's why I'm here.
Okay. One final question then.
Representative Phillips.
In other words, well, let me ask you specifically, have you looked at the financing package behind this or the actuarial studies with regard to this and done any analysis on a claims basis of what liquor liability claims have been made throughout the state in the last few years?
No, we haven't. In fact, I if I remember correctly, in this bill, this has gone through a number of drafts and a number of compromises, and I thought that they had basically agreed that there had to be an actuarial study. And in fact, as an example, when I told the people that the governor supported this, one of the things he wanted to make sure that we had the resources to conduct the actuarial study to do the thing that you wanted. It just suggested, and I think it's something that is needed.
Well, I think something's needed also. Are you going to come back and testify in favor or in opposition to any specific bill once we've heard the amendments to this bill and have a chance to go through it and actually endorse it? Since I actually, I'll admit, referencing the wrong section when I talked about the wholesale tax, so we know your opinion as to whether you think it will be a sound fund and provide for reasonable premiums and actually create a pool of money that the attorneys can go after?
I would, Representative Phillips, I would estimate that I have testified this session on funds, and it's no different than what I've done with you on a number of things of this nature, of whether they're health risk pools, a variety of things. They are extremely speculative as to saying that this is definitely going to happen or not happen. And the reason is that I've said before that insurance is nothing more than anticipating or predicting the future. And you have to have some actuarial data to be able to, with some certainty, be able to tell what you think with some reasonable certainty will occur in the future. And I'm not, as I said, I have no idea factually claims or anything of this nature on this particular type fund and this type program. And it's what I've said about the assigned risk, health assigned risk pool that I think it's Senate Bill 538, and there's disagreements because our division, when we did look at it, we thought it would have, as an example in that case, a $2 to $3 million impact. And I remember the industry coming in and saying, no, that's much, much, it's just, they estimated, I should say, at about $15 to $20 million. So it's not an exact science, but I just don't have the information to tell you in answer to your question whether, in fact, that there's going to be the funding mechanism will, in fact, be valid. Now, I have to tell you, historically, these, and we've said this in every committee, there are problems with these things about trying to get them funded over the long run. They always, you can figure out what the short term startup funding you'll need, but it's when the loss experience comes in of whether, in fact, it's solvent.
Well, Ted, I appreciate your comments. You said what I had hoped you would say, which is your personal opinion with regard to doing an analysis and an actuarial study to determine, you know, where you should go from there. So often we get excited about good ideas and don't do the background information to know once we leap whether we're going to land on solid ground. I appreciate your comments.
Mr. Chair?
Lieutenant Dix.
Well, sometimes I know I get carried away in the comments, but I'll just point out that although it's a fund for attorneys or lawyers to go after, it's also a fund that would help victims. And I think that's the primary reason why I'd be interested in setting it up, any type of that fund, not for attorneys to go after.
Okay, is there further question or comment for the insurance commissioner on this issue? Representative Dick.
So if we pass the bill you pointed out, Commissioner, you would prefer that an actuarial study be done before it's actually set up and implemented?
I didn't. That's a decision that I think the committee has to make. I understand where Representative Phillips is coming from and what his position was, is that in fact before the fund would be operative, if I understood him correctly, what he was proposing or suggesting to the committee, that maybe it would be better to have an actuarial study done to determine exactly what the funding requirements of this thing will be. Now, my answer to that is that if you ask me whether I think that that's good and sound management, well, I guess it's always nice to look and see if you got gas in the car before you take off down the road. But that's a decision that you have to make, and I would suggest that this wouldn't be the first time the legislature took off without any gas in the car. But that's something I think is a policy decision that you have to make.
Dave Phillips.
Well, I appreciate you saying that we should do some study before we launch down the road. But I'll tell you,
I didn't know if I said that. I said
matter of interpretation, perhaps. Have you looked at whether there should be a mandatory pool or a three-way system set up for insurance on liquor liability?
I haven't.
Do you have any feelings as to whether it should be tax supported through a wholesale tax or a retail tax?
No, I don't. I just, can I tell you that there's so many mechanisms in this legislature right now and different ideas about how these things are funded and who pays for them. And I wish I could tell you that there was one that I could point you to and says, you know, you should copy that one, but I don't think that any of them are.
Okay.
Any special or anything.
Okay. Further questions for the commissioner? Hey, Ted, I don't know how much time you have to stay with us as we complete our work on this provision. I believe at this point, Ms. Akin, you may have some. We have the -5 amendments, but I understand you may have an amendment or a couple items you want to bring to our attention before we decide what action we're going to take on this issue.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Jane Aiken. I'm with the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUII, the new council. It was brought to my attention after the Dash 5 amendments had been prepared by Legislative Council that what was not changed with the Dash 5 amendments were the various timelines. And the Dash 5 amendments include the actuarial study that has been suggested by Representative Phillips. Require an actuarial study, I believe it's the last section of Dash 5 amendments, to be completed within the first 6 months after the bill takes effect. And so we need to push back the various timelines. That was not done in the Dash 5 amendments, apparently, and I've prepared some handwritten amendments and copies. But I believe that...
Okay, we'll ask Council to share those with us.
There was also a couple of additional changes I put in those handwritten amendments. Because of the change of the timeline, that would allow the corporation to establish their new budget at a different frame, because they need a prorated period of time when it goes into effect. Then the bill contemplates that on October 1st, the budget's going to be prepared. So if it goes into effect before that, they'll need to have a different timeline for the first budget that they submit to prepare and try to make those types of changes. We also had to make a change in staggering of when licensees would be required to obtain the insurance, and so that the amount could be prorated over the period of time. I believe those handwritten amendments would do that and incorporate the six-month actuarial study.
Okay. Members should have before them Dash 5 amendments as well as the cleanup amendments, I believe that Ms. Aiken has shared with us, to the Dash 5 amendments. And questions at this time. Representative Phillips.
Jane, since you still have the wholesale liquor assessment being the part that makes this fiscally operative, and I haven't had an opportunity to go through this, how, I assume, since you've got a staggered implementation date, that the legislature would be able to come back and approve the implementation of the tax. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, no, there's no change as far as the implementation of the tax. All we did is change the time frame, and this was part of the compromise that was made between the Governor's Advisory Committee and the representatives of Oregonians for Fair Insurance.
Okay.
They were the ones who requested and wanted the wholesale tax contract.
Okay, if you remember the discussion between Representative Springer and myself the last time, if we were to authorize this, it would go out, the commissioner would do a six-month study, he would say, yes, we don't need to do it, or no, we don't need to do it. Presumably, because of the way it's set up, the actual aerial study, regardless of what it finds, we're going to go ahead and do it. And to do that, it has to be funded off of a premium tax, or not a premium tax, a wholesale tax. Have you looked at the constitutionality of the fact that we have authorized something in a legislative session for staggered implementation, and how that, because it's supported by a tax, is affected by the referendum process?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, we have not looked into, and I don't believe Lisa Brown from Oregonians for Fair Insurance has looked into that particular constitutional issue about the tax question. We did at least discuss briefly about the question that was raised about perhaps having the insurance commissioner do the actuarial study, and in a sense requiring the insurance commissioner to be the triggering mechanism for the fund going back. If the insurance commissioner said yes, then you have a fund. If he said no, you did not. And there were some questions raised about a separation of powers issue there, as opposed to the legislature making the decision that we will have a fund or we won't. And we were not comfortable with making a change that might create the separation of powers issues and leaving the decision to the insurance commissioner that yes, we'll have a fund. That should be the legislature's decision.
Okay, so we're going to do a study, and you mandated that, irrespective of its findings, this is going to go into effect based on a tax-supported system that, and I must, we don't know whether it's constitutionally or unconstitutionally based, but it's still on the premise that half the amount will come from a mandatory participation on premium because of the liquor licensee process, and half through a tax. Is that basically...
Representative Phillips, Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, the way it's currently drafted, yes, that's correct. And as far as the way the bill is currently drafted, there is a section that we added, I believe, after a discussion with Legislative Council, questions that you raised when Ms. Brown and I prepared here before with some of the new amendments we've done to the two bills, which provides for a mechanism for if any portion of the bill is found to be unconstitutional, how that would be dispersed as far as funds which had been collected. But there was incorporated a safety valve to that extent if it was found to be unconstitutional.
Dane, Mr. Chair.
Representative Phillips.
Dane, had you considered the option that I think Representative Springer brought up, which is saying study it, implement it based on premiums for the first year, and come back saying the legislature recognizes that that is not financially a feasible way to do this, and then would authorize implementation of the tax side of it? Did you look at that option?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, we didn't look at that specifically, and I explained to you why. The bill in its present form is a result of the discussions and compromises working with Oregonians for Fair Insurance that they felt was critical to their support and their industry, members, restaurant owners, taverners, and so forth. And they were very concerned, was critical about the 50-50 split between premiums and tax. On behalf of the Governor's Advisory Committee, the position we've had, we definitely would like to have the fund. We'd like to have it in the corporation form in whatever fashion. If this body would prefer to have the initial phase be funded through premiums alone, and then go to the tax if that's necessary, or any drink that was, other funding mechanisms that have been discussed in prior legislative sessions, we're not opposed to that type of concept. But the bill in its present form is a result of working with both groups and the industry. Oregonians for Fair Insurance did feel it was important to have the 50-50 split. I don't believe any of their representatives are here today, so I can't speak on their behalf.
One final question.
Representative Phillips.
You mentioned the membership of this, the other group. Previously, when asked upon the membership, they didn't list their membership as restaurant and tavern owners, as you just did. Do you have a list, or does anybody have a list of who this other group is and who their membership comprise?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, I believe when Ms. McCready and Ms. Swanson testified, they described the various folks who are part of their membership, and I may have misstated as far as specifically mentioned Barnes, and I don't know their membership list. I haven't seen that. I believe they did indicate to the committee when they surveyed all their licensees and put in information to the committee that they were providing that information. That may be one of the documents they gave you. If not, I can certainly ask them to provide you with a list of membership.
Please do. I'm sure others have questions.
What's up, Dix?
You say wholesale art. You mean the OLCC as well. That's where the tax would be applied.
I believe the wholesalers, that would include on all alcoholic beverages. And Mr. Chairman, Representative Dix, if I may, if you wish, I would be happy to talk with OFFI and see what their position would be about the first year being premiums alone and second year being billed for tax as a consideration and get back to you with an answer if you wish.
Well, there was just an issue that Representative Springer had raised as a possible compromise, and I wanted to see that has been followed up on.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, I apologize. I didn't hear about that.
Well, I don't even know if you were a party there when it was discussed. I just remember it came up.
But I will check that out for you.
I would appreciate that.
Okay. Further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burton.
Yeah. In your proposed amendments, you're changing those dates for that six-month period on the page 15 of the bill. On line 10 in section 26, it says it talks about the liability of a corporation on otherwise insurable that occurs prior to January 1st, 1988. That date would also have to be changed, would not?
In the handwritten changes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Burton, yes, that would change to, I believe, July 1st of 1988. Perhaps as some additional assistance to the committee.
I see it. Thank you very much.
These are handwritten. I prepared sort of a timeline that I believe we've corrected, which would outline the law approximately coming into effect October 1st, 87. The emergency clause has been taken off for some other suggestions of committee members. So assuming this comes into law about 90 days after session around October 1st, October 1st to March 31st, the actuarial study. May 1st, sections 1 through 26 become operative, and that would include the appointment of the new directors. By June 1st, they'd need the corporation would be certifying to the commission the amounts to be collected by July 1st. They'd be having to notify OLCC of the changes they had to make. which would give OLCC a limited time frame for notifying licensees of the rate changes as of July 1st, then July 1st becomes the triggering date for the licensees whose, the staggering mechanism, the licensees whose license renewal comes up, and I believe they come up geographically during four times, July 1st, October 1st, January 1st, and April 1st. So it would stagger in geographically as they're not licenses were, and that also be the time when they start collecting the wholesale tax under this provision. Claims could be made on events that happened July 1st or after, so forth. So that would be basically July 1st is the when the fund would be affecting and benefiting at some future date the victims, the licensees, and so forth. And I believe the way the language is right now, a licensee who, say, had renewed their license April 1st would not be required to be covered by the fund as far as paying the premiums until the next time they renewed, and therefore they wouldn't have that coverage until they renewed. They would not be required to have that insurance until they did renew in April of, which would be April of 89. So it staggers those provisions in, it staggers in coverage, and it does that based on the current scheme with OLCC geographically. And if that'd be assistance, I've handwritten these out to look at.
Mr. Chair.
That's it. I think she's got it.
Representative Phillips.
Section 12 of the Act says the corporation shall determine the premiums to be paid. But right above that, we say no licensee shall be denied the opportunity to purchase a policy. By lumping cumulative risks, are you setting up just a bad risk pool where some of the bad apples will skew the system for everyone and thus drive premiums? The bill, I think, said fair premiums or reasonable premiums, which is in the eye of the beholder. And how do you know what those premiums are going to be?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, on page 8, which is just above section 12, I believe that you referred to, of the dash 5, we put that language in there in this most recent draft. We hope to accomplish the intent that was and the concern expressed by Representative Bunn that other language in our bill looked like some licensees would be effectively driven out of business. We wanted this statement in the bill that no licensee who's duly licensed would be denied the opportunity to purchase a policy. There are other provisions in the bill that would require the corporation to set their premiums based on loss experience and other factors actuarially sound. We've added some additional language that I believe will get to your concern on page 9, lines 17 through 21, which would require the corporation to adopt a rating plan that reasonably reflects the prior claims of the insureds. And that would include not less than 2 levels for rates that have favorable loss experience and those with unfavorable loss experience. The scheme of the bill is to require those who are the more serious risks to pay the higher premiums, those who are good, have a good favorable loss experience, and by their practices and other factors which are laid out in the bill, that they would not be paying and subsidizing those who are bad risks. And we would believe that that's what the corporation is set to do.
Great. One other question on that same issue.
Representative Phillips.
If I'm reading this correctly, on same page 9 on sub 5, the corporation shall set the amount of assessments and premiums to be collected. That's reflecting back to what you just gave me on the variety of rates and assessments and what other risks there might be. But have you, what's to say if we're mandatory, we're saying it's mandatory that you have insurance, but that the premiums will be where somebody can afford to get them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, I don't believe there's a guarantee in the bill, affordability in terms of a flat-out guarantee, the way it's drafted right now. On lines 26 to 28 that you referred to on page 9, I'm talking about the amount of assessments and premiums. So let me break that down. Assessments refer to the wholesale assessments. Premiums to the licensee premium that would be paid. By the mechanism of the bill, the assessments would be one-half of the total amount needed to be collected. What this does is requires the corporation to ensure by their setting of the premium and assessment level sufficient funds to do the job.
Thank you.
That's the intent.
Council?
I've answered. I had the answer. Thanks.
Okay. Commissioner Kulongoski.
I will jump in just on one thing, a concern that I have, and it's more administrative. First of all, I am concerned about who's going to pay for the actuarial study. And I want to make sure that that in fact that the people who basically are the ones that are participating and this thing's set up for are the ones that fund the study. I mean the actuarial study. Now the reason I obviously what I wish we could do is basically say they shall put in so much money to have the study. I don't know how you do that if in fact that it isn't. I haven't yet understood exactly an answer to Representative Phillips' question of whether in fact that the study is going to trigger the fund or if in fact the fund is triggered at the effective date of the act, and the study is just merely something. It's a preliminary to being able to determine what a particular tax is going to be imposed or not. What I would like, if I can't get the money up front, I would like in the fact in there that if in fact that the actuarial studies and it starts up, that they owe me the cost of the actuarial study and they can pay it back. Now, the other thing is I want to tell you is at this particular time when you're talking about deadlines,